VOA News. I'm Christopher Cruz reporting. Stock prices tumbled again on Wall Street on Monday. Associated Press correspondent Warren Levinson reports.
Share prices fell 2% for the second day in a row on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial sank 507 points, pushing stock prices solidly into the red for the year. The Standard & Poor's 500 also fell 2% to its lowest level since October of last year. The Nasdaq Composite dropped 2.25%. Utility and real estate stocks, which have been stable in the market's recent downturn, took heavy losses, as did healthcare and insurance companies, after a Texas judge's ruling that the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional. Bond prices edged upward.
Fewer than 40 of the stocks comprising the S&P 500 finished the day higher. The UN General Assembly voted nearly unanimously on Monday to adopt a framework to strengthen the international response to the global refugee crisis. The United States and Hungary were the only two nations to vote against the Global Compact on Refugees. 181 countries voted in favor. The Dominican Republic, Eritrea, and Libya abstained. Over the past 18 months, in conjunction with the UN Refugee Agency, many countries negotiated the non-binding document, which aims to ease the pressure on refugee host countries and support conditions in countries for displaced citizens to return home. European Union members agreed Monday to cut carbon dioxide emissions from new cars 37.5% by 2030. The deal reached Monday was a compromise between EU countries, who wanted a 30% cut, and the European Parliament, which called for a 40% cut. A European pro-green energy group called Transport and Environment said it welcomed the deal, but believes it falls short. This is VOA News. Pakistan organized peace talks involving U.S. and Taliban officials took place in the United Arab Emirates on Monday. Government officials were not immediately available to discuss details of the meetings. The talks in Abu Dhabi are the latest attempt to bring about a negotiated end to the now 17-year-long war. It comes after Russia hosted peace talks last month in Moscow, talks that did not include representatives from the Afghan government. The White House is denying Turkey's claim that President Trump is thinking about extraditing the wanted Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen back to Turkey. Turkey's foreign minister said on the CNBC television network this week that Trump told the Turkish president that the U.S. is working on extraditing Gulen and, quote, other people. A senior White House official on Monday denied that was the case. A Senate report says the Russian interference operation discovered after the 2016 presidential election was much bigger than originally thought. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The report says there are still active and ongoing Russian interference operations on social media platforms. Private researchers used data provided by Facebook, Twitter, and Google's parent company in compiling the report. Combined with another report, it's the first comprehensive look at Russian interference on social media beyond what the companies have said. Today's report says there are still live accounts tied to a Russian agency that was named in a special counsel indictment for a social media operation aimed at influencing the 2016 race.
Human Rights Watch and the Kenya National Coalition of Human Rights Defenders are alleging that Kenyan authorities have harassed and abused environmental activists protesting the development of a new coal plant. Correspondent Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Activist Ishaq Abubakar works with Save Lamu, an organization that fights for the rights of the people. He says campaigners are targeted because of their work. If you are going to bring us projects with destruction to our natural resources, it is going to wipe out our culture, he says. How do you expect the community to live? So when we stand up and speak up about our challenges and problems, that is when you get problems. He also said they get arrested, harassed, beaten, tear-gassed, or detained in different places, and authorities have nothing to charge them for. Government spokesman Eric Kiraithe denies the accusations.
There were no public signs Monday of ending a stalemate over U.S. government spending that threatens to partially shut down the federal government. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world around the clock at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Christopher Cruz, VOA News.
Daily Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 18th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Two former leaders go head-to-head in tomorrow's Madagascar presidential election.
There are a lot of elements that will impact the outcome. The first is turnout, but I think both sides are very energized. I think it will be close.
Sohandra Ravanarivo is a leading member of FAFI, a civil society group in Madagascar. Togo's main opposition coalition is determined to force a postponement of Thursday's controversial parliamentary election. Human Rights Watch accuses Kenyan authorities of harassment, and the Lord Mayor of Kampala appeals for international support to expedite political transition in Uganda.
We invite all peace-loving people and, of course, the international community to take a keen interest in the political events and processes going on in Uganda, because it is said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Erasmus Lukwago is the Lord Mayor of Kampala. Oil corruption in Congo Brazzaville, and we'll tell you why Zimbabwe relocated 100 elephants to a poacher-ravaged area. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Voters in Madagascar go to the polls tomorrow, Wednesday, to choose a new president. Two former leaders, Andre Rajoelina and Marc Ravalomanana, face each other in a runoff after both failed to garner over half of the total vote count in the first round. Before Wednesday's runoff, the two contestants participated in last week's presidential debate to address issues of concern to the citizens. Sohandra Ravanarivo is a leading member of FAFI, a civil society group based in Madagascar's capital, Antananarivo.
Well, I think the electorate was very keen to hear what the two had to say. I think there was a high level of interest, and people stayed up to watch the debate. It was less contentious than the first one that happened a week ago, as the CINI and the Organization of Journalism Organizations tried to set some strict rules around the two candidates so that they wouldn't go off into topics that the people didn't want to hear about. So they tried to focus on the issues of interest to the people, and they, generally speaking, they succeeded in doing that.
Were Malagasy's satisfied with the way both candidates addressed issues that they are interested in ahead of the election Wednesday?
They came to understand that Andrzej Duda had very superficial answers to the questions that were presented, whereas Marc Ravalomanana has experience and detailed knowledge of a lot of the topics. However, he's not a particularly eloquent speaker. So, you know, it's hard to say that anyone came away as a clear winner because, you know, each had their strengths and weaknesses.
What are people saying concerning who they think might win? Because others are saying that it looks like Marc Ravalomanana could pull it off, or that Andre Rajoelina has a little bit more support since he came out first in the first round. He could take it home. And that it will take Marc Ravalomanana a lot of effort between now and Wednesday in order to bridge that gap and win the runoff. What is your take?
No, I think it's very close and it's very hard to say. There are a lot of elements that will impact the outcome. The first is turnout. If in the first round only about 4.5 million people out of almost 10 million registered voters showed up, and the question is, will that go up significantly? And if so, where? But, you know, I think both sides are very energized. I think it will be close, and anyone could win it at this stage.
International poll observers said, although there were a few incidents of voter irregularities, it was marginal enough not to affect the outcome of the vote. What are you hearing from some of your friends who voted, and do you think there will be more scrutiny by political parties to ensure that some of these voter irregularities are reduced to a barest minimum?
It's not so much what happens in the voting station. it's what happens before. In other words, whether electoral cards will be distributed in time if they get into the hands of the rightful owners on the one hand. And then there's the time period after the voting stations close and the vote is tallied, all the way up to the return of the result to the Capitol.
Sahandra Rabana-Ravui is a lawyer and a leading member of FAFI, a civil society group in Madagascar. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Antananarivo. With two more days left before Togo's December 20th controversial parliamentary elections, the main opposition coalition is again vowing to stop the elections from taking place by holding more protests. Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson, coordinator of the 14-party coalition, says the opposition has once again appealed to regional facilitator Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to join the call to postpone the elections because, she said, the entire country will be put in danger if the election is held. Ajamagbo-Johnson says if ECOWAS and the international community fails to stop the election, they will be accused of the crime of failing to assist the Togolese people.
We are still trying to obtain the postponement of this election because we think that this election should not be organized. If they organize it, it will put the country into danger. You know that we have an agenda of action to get this result, but we are also appealing to the facilitators and the members of the international community to work towards this postponement. Yesterday we had a meeting with the Ghanaian head of state, who is one of the ECOWAS facilitators, and we are sure that he understood that he should help also to obtain the postponement.
Yet, Bridget, it seems to me that time is running out.
Yeah, but you know, it's never late to take a good decision, especially if what is at stake is the future of a nation. And we are sure that the international community will take its responsibility. Otherwise, they will be accused of a crime of failure to assist a people in danger.
You mentioned the roadmap that ECOWAS prepared for the opposition and the government. Where are we in terms of meeting the goals of that roadmap?
We can say that when you look at the three main points of this roadmap, you will say that today none of those points has been implemented. We still have a lot of people arrested. They are still in prison. And you still have militaries in at least three cities, Sokode, Bafilo, and Mango. And they are using, the government is using these militaries to abuse people in those cities. With regard to the reform, to date, none of the institutional and electoral reform has been implemented. And this is the one who is guilty, is the government. And finally, with regard to the third point, which is the electoral process, you see yourself that instead of having an inclusive and consensual electoral process, the government is trying to organize these elections alone. One of the reasons for which we have to postpone this election is that the elections are not in conformity with the roadmap, and they will bring also political violence, and we have to avoid it.
Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson is coordinator of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lome. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 18th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. A new report says Kenyan authorities harassed and abused environmental activists protesting the development of a new coal plant. The report comes from Human Rights Watch and the Kenyan National Coalition of Human Rights Defenders. Mohammed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
The Human Rights Watch and National Coalition of Human Rights Defenders report they just want to silence us, details harassment and abuses against Kenyan environmental activists who have campaigned against a proposed coal plant in Lamu County in Kenya's Coast Region. Otisiano Namwaya is a Human Rights Watch researcher.
Speaking up, they do speak up. But then after they speak up, they either face threats, sometimes anonymous threats on phone, sometimes they get arrested, sometimes they are in-person threats from people they identify as police officers. But they have also been arrested, they have been detained, they have been interrogated.
The proposed plant, which is estimated to cost $2 billion, is waiting for the green light from Kenya's Environmental Court. The plant will be constructed by a Chinese company, China Power Global. Kenyan officials insist the plant will help meet the country's growing demand for electric power. The country's environmental agency has accepted the plans, saying all environmental concerns were considered. Critics, however, believe such a project will pollute the environment and damage the marine ecosystem. Human Rights Watch has documented actions against 34 campaigners during the past 5 months. The group also accuses Kenyan security agencies of breaking our protests and restricting public meetings in Lamu County. Activist Ishaq Abubakar works with Save Lamu, an organization that fights for the rights of the people. He says campaigners are targeted because of their work.
If you are going to bring us project with destruction to our natural resources, it is going to wipe out our culture, he says. How do you expect the community to live? So when we stand up and speak up about our challenges and problems, that is when you get problems. He also say they get arrested, harassed, beaten, tear-gassed, or detained in different places, and authorities have nothing to charge them for. Government spokesman Eric Kiraithe denies the accusations.
Well, reports like intimidation of activists on environmental matters can only be wrong. They can only be wrong inferences. They can be based on wrong information, because it is the policy of the government to work with any and every party interested in matters of environmental conservation.
Kamau Ngugi is the head of National Coalition for Human Rights Defenders. He called on the government to respect the rule of law, including the rights of freedom of assembly and the right to a healthy environment. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Lord Mayor of Kampala has appealed for international support to help expedite political transition in Uganda. Irias Lukwago says the political environment in Uganda, where President Yoweri Museveni has been in power for close to 30 years, is extremely hostile. He says the biggest challenge facing Ugandans is President Museveni's stay in power, and until that is resolved, there can be no meaningful progress towards economic development and growth. President Museveni has said he wants to leave power, but Ugandans want him to stay on. The Lord Mayor Lukwago told me in our Washington studio that he is in the United States to discuss with civil society and political leaders the transformation of Kampala City and also the issue of governance in Uganda.
Well, I'm executing my duties, one, as the Lord Mayor of Kampala. The number of engagements I was supposed to have with various leaders, and we are discussing quite a number of issues to do with the transformation of Kampala. But on top of that, there are issues to do with the governance of the country, which I've also been dealing with here, with a number of different organizations, different leaders here, and different agencies, yes.
When you talk about the transformation of Kampala, what exactly are you talking about?
Well, the agenda to develop Kampala generally. We are at a level of laying a foundation for the transformation of the city, which is reasonable enough to be the capital city of the Pearl of Africa.
Too often I see African cities getting into kind of sistership with some cities in the United States. Is that something you are looking for?
Yeah, sure. I've had actually engagements with the mayor of Waltham City. We've discussed a number of issues to do with training and exchange programs, and also issues to do with collaboration.
Lord Mayor, you had some turbulent times with the government, but these days it seems that we don't hear a lot. Are things okay now?
Far from that, actually. The situation is dire. The political environment in Uganda is extremely hostile. You know, when you are dealing with a president who has been in power for close to 30 years now, you know what it means. You see, the biggest challenge now in Uganda is Mr. Museveni's stay in power. That is the biggest challenge we are facing. So until we sort out that issue, don't be deceived that there will be anything meaningful that can be done in terms of development, progress, and also growth.
So what can't be done? Because most recently in this studio, I had a talk with the Honorable Bobby Wine. Is it fair to say maybe President Museveni has been successful in terms of silencing you people?
Well, I shouldn't say that he has succeeded in suppressing us. But yes, he is doing his best to persecute whoever is opposing his government, real or perceived. Whoever is seen to be opposing Mr. Museveni will face the brunt of persecution. And that's basically what is happening. So right now, the political parties cannot freely function.
Lord Mayor, before I let you go, you mentioned a while ago about the critical issue being a way out for President Museveni. What do you think is the way out? What can be done?
Well, power belongs to the people. It's the obligation of Ugandans to ensure that they mount pressure on him so that he relinquishes power. That's the campaign we are engaged in, and it's against that background that we invite all peace-loving people and, of course, the international community to take a keen interest in the political events and processes going on in Uganda, because it is said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Erias Lukwago is the Lord Mayor of Uganda's capital, Kampala. He spoke with me in our Washington studio. A new investigation from Global Witness puts the spotlight on two global oil companies working in Congo Brazzaville and their dealings with a former International Monetary Fund official and another middleman who is being investigated for corruption in Portugal. Global Witness spokesperson Pete Jones talked to Ricky Stryak about what their report uncovered.
So what we've managed to discover is that, in fact, the company up until 2015 and during 2015 was owned 51% by a man called Yaya Musa, who's the former IMF representative to Republic of Congo, and 49% by a man called Jose Vega, who is the focus of a big corruption investigation in Portugal at the moment. Portuguese authorities are looking at Vega for corruption linked to his business in Republic of Congo and his connections to the presidential family there. So for us, this is really interesting that not only has a former IMF official clearly started to do business and jointly own this company with a man who's so controversial. And it's also interesting that two huge oil companies agreed in 2015 to go into business with these guys. So we've got the Italian national oil company Eni and the French national oil company Total at one point had agreed to go into business with Continent. And although that deal fell through, Eni in a separate license is still in business with Continent Congo, despite the risks presented by the political connections of the owners of the company.
What are those risks?
Yeah, so in these kinds of deals, what's important to identify what we call politically exposed people, and that means people that have connections to power. And so both Vega and Yaya Musa would qualify, arguably, as politically exposed people in this situation. And the risk around doing deals with guys connected to power is that there can be corruption or influence peddling involved. The other concern is that there could be a conflict of interest. So, for example, Yaya Musa, the former IMF representative, played a role in the team that delivered a multi-billion-dollar bailout to Republic of Congo back in 2010.
What are the next steps that should be taken or that could be taken to address these issues and these concerns? Is it up to the Congolese government? Is it up to Total and Eni, or is it up to both?
I think there are important lessons for all of the parties concerned. The thing that's important and interesting to note is that at the moment, Republic of Congo is negotiating another bailout with the IMF. So this would be the second multi-billion dollar bailout in the space of 8 or 9 years, which is just crazy. So that just speaks to some very concerning mismanagement of Congo's revenues, and it's a very oil-dependent economy. So generally, this would be a sign that the Congolese government needs to do a better job of managing its oil resources It could also potentially be a concern for the IMF. There is a big question mark over Yahya Moussa's role and a possible conflict of interest. That's something that internally the IMF might want to look at. And in terms of Eni and Total, for us, it's very important that these companies start to take their due diligence more seriously. You know, Total have told us that they identified the risks and thought they could manage them. And Eni, probably even worse, actually said that at its AGM in 2017, they told us that they had found no concerns regarding Moussa or Vega, and they thought that everything was fine, even though it had identified them as the owners. So for us, there are real questions for Total and Eni's management to answer about the due diligence processes and the kinds of risks that they're taking in these deals.
That was Pete Jones, a spokesperson for Global Witness. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from London. Zimbabwe has moved 100 elephants from a congested conservancy in the south to another park near the border with Zambia. The new conservancy offers the elephants more to eat and more room to wander. But the park has been stalked by poachers in the past. Zimbabwean wildlife officials say the poaching is now under control. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare.
Zimbabwe's Parks and Wildlife Management Authority finished relocating the 100 elephants to the Rifa Safari Conservancy on the border with Zambia on December 15. The animals were moved from the Save Valley Conservancy in the southeast because they were eating all of the vegetation. Wilfred Pabst from Save Valley Conservancy.
We are deforested through elephants. The problem with that is they are destroying their own food base as well as the food base for many other plains game animals, leaf eaters in particular.
Pabst said he's excited the elephant population in Save Valley has grown to the point where they have to be moved.
That is a highlight and success of conservation, the way it's written in any book there is. I feel utterly elated. It's a high emotional moment for me to see that 25 years of sweat and tears have come to this.
But the elephant's new home, Rifa Safari Conservancy, had a problem with poachers in the 1990s and 2000s. Wildlife officials removed the endangered species from the park, but only after a large number of elephants were killed. Tinashe Farao, Zimbabwe Wildlife Authority spokesman, says the agency has upped its anti-poaching efforts at Rifa Safari since President Emmerson Mnangagwa came to power in 2017.
Because of that political will, we have also improved in our training for our rangers. We have also increased our patrols. Despite the challenges of resources, we have also managed to do a lot of training for our judiciary. You know, it's important to ensure that if someone is arrested, the cases are expeditiously dealt with.
He says judges now understand the importance of enforcing regulations against poaching and wildlife trafficking.
The mandatory 9-year sentence if you are caught with an elephant tusk or some of those endangered species has helped us a lot. It has become a deterrent measure to would-be poachers.
Now authorities will see if the elephants can attract tourists to this northern part of Zimbabwe. If all goes well, Rifa Safari may take some of the excess rhino population from the Save Valley Conservancy next year. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And that's it for this Tuesday, December 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa. your weekend destination.